Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy. And today, I'm going to tell you a story about Zach and Addie.
Zach and Addie. All right.
So when you hear about New Orleans, you first think of Mardi Gras, beads, delicious food.
Parties.
Maybe even Hurricane Katrina. And I do too. But I also think about the story of Zach and Addie. And that's my little true crime brain coming through.
Okay.
It's another story that has stuck with me since I heard it. So we'll start with Zach. Zach had a very laid-back attitude. He was charming, smart, and was good-looking. He wanted to be a teacher. But when he was only 17 years old, he met Lana, who was a dancer and was 10 years older than him. She got pregnant, and they got married. She got pregnant again, and that is what prompted him to join the Army. He wanted to be able to provide for his family with the benefits that came along with that. He served tours in Iraq and Kosovo before he was discharged. But while over there, he experienced the death of a fellow soldier and also the tragic murder of a child that he had become friends with. The child was killed for speaking with Americans, and that took a huge toll on Zach's mental health. On the physical side of things, his boots didn't fit. And I know that sounds like it pales in comparison to what he was dealing with mentally, but this caused him to get hammer toe, which was very painful. He started to fail health and fitness tests on purpose so he could be discharged and go home. Even though being generally discharged meant that he would lose the health benefits that he joined for, and now he was also suffering with PTSD. Lana would go on to say that the man that came back from Iraq was not Zach. And they eventually got divorced because of this.
Well, that's rough. A lot of life-changing things happen in wartime, especially mentally. Right. And it's different. It's a different experience for each person. The mental as well as the physical, well-being of our veterans should be our top priority. But that's not always the case, unfortunately.
It is not. So let's shift over to Addie. Addie Hall was quite the free spirit. So she was right at home in New Orleans, even though she was originally from North Carolina. She was a poet, dancer, artist. She did so many different things because she was so free spirited. She just did what she felt she needed to do at the time. She did have an abusive childhood and several abusive relationships as an adult. She was known to ride her bike everywhere she went, and she was also known to drink excessively and do drugs. And some say that she was undiagnosed bipolar, but some reports showed that she was on medication for bipolar disorder but not taking it regularly. So we'll say that she had untreated bipolar disorder, because even when you're diagnosed and don't take your medicine, you're not treating it properly.
True.
Now, this caused Addie to have wild outbursts of anger. And when Zach and Addie met while bartending together at the Spotted Cat in the French Quarter, she would often be mean to Zach. Because Zach would do like magic tricks, card tricks, and she thought this was just way too much. But Zach was drawn to her, and he eventually won her over. This started a very troubled relationship between the two. Between the drugs and alcohol, his PTSD, and her bipolar disorder, it was like match in a gas tank. A couple of weeks into their relationship is when Hurricane Katrina hit. Zach planned to leave New Orleans to go stay with Lana and the kids, and Lana had even told him that he could bring Addie. But instead of evacuating, the two held up in her apartment and fell even deeper in love with each other. In the aftermath of Katrina, they found themselves in a very small population of remaining people left in the French Quarter. There was a minimal damage to the French Quarter outside of debris and loss of electricity, water, things like that. And they're actually remembered as taking care of their little small community by going around and getting alcohol from surrounding bars and trading it for food and other items. And they would cook dinner for their community members over campfires. They were even photographed for Time magazine. and they were thought of in very high regard for standing strong for their community. They'd spend their nights looking at the stars and singing songs, because in a place like the French Quarter, there's so much light and so much going on all the time, you can't see the stars all the time, so they just kind of reveled in the peace and tranquility of it. But as the French Quarter came back to life, everything else did too. Their little world that they had lived in for a couple of weeks had begun to change. They came together and thrived in the chaos, but the honeymoon period came to a crashing halt with the normalcy of life returning to the city. The bills had to be paid. They had to go back to work. It seemed like that the cleanup began outside and the baggage started piling up inside. Zach still had to pay child support and go back to being a dad and deal with his ex-wife. Addie didn't want anything other than Zach, not all the rest of Zach's life, just him. They started violently fighting. I'm talking about verbally and physically. They fought and broke up so often, the friends never knew if they were together or not each time they'd meet.
Well, some people do live in the chaos of these types of relationships, but they are so mentally and emotionally bad for you that they do more harm than they do good.
Absolutely. So what did they do about it, you wonder? Well, they got a new apartment. They thought that if they got like a fresh start, that everything would be okay. Now, this apartment was over the famous Priestess Miriam's Voodoo Spiritual Temple. Now, when I say they got an apartment together, it's because they did, but it wasn't long after they had moved in that Addie thought Zach was cheating on her, so she talked to their landlord about putting the apartment in her name only. She got a handwritten contract, and when Zach found out, he was livid.
It sounds like she was preparing for a future that maybe didn't include Zach.
Right.
You know, with their relationship the way it was, they should have both been doing that, I think, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, as tumultuous, that's the word, as their relationship was, everybody around them knew it wasn't going to last longer. It was going to end bad.
Yeah.
So, but when you're in that bubble, you can't really see what's going on, and it's sad.
Yeah.
But on October 5th of 2006, at around 1 in the morning, a drunken Zach strangled Addie to death in that apartment. He engaged in necrophilia and fell asleep next to her body. The next day at work, yes, I said that, he went to work the next day. His coworkers said that he was acting weird. He was being quiet and wearing sunglasses, and he was just acting a little off. Now, Addie's friends and coworkers started asking where she was, and he told people that she left him and moved back to North Carolina. This was met with mixed reviews because while she was unpredictable and often made decisions spur of the moment, she also called herself a Puerto Rican, which is apparently something locals call people who are basically a part of the French Quarter. They fit in so well. So to leave would, you know, just spur of the moment like that. Not everybody bought that. Almost 2 weeks later, on October 17th, Zach went to the 7th floor and had a drink at the rooftop bar of the Omni Royal Orleans Hotel. He paced for a minute, and then he jumped to his death. Police found a plastic bag in his back pocket with a handwritten letter saying "for police only." And his dog tags were in his pocket as well. His gate keys to his apartment were in his front pocket. Now the letter said, "This is not accidental. I had to take my own life to pay for the one I took. If you send a patrol car to," and gives his address, "you will find the dismembered corpse of my girlfriend, Addie, in the oven, on the stove, and in the fridge, and a full signed confession from myself, Zach Bowen."
So that's how they know this timeline. He wrote out his confession for them to find.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote everything down. He had journals, and he wrote everything down. When police got to the apartment, they found that the air conditioner was set to 60 degrees and on full blast. The walls had silver-colored spray paint with sayings like, I love her, I'm a total failure, and look in the oven. Zach had used a hacksaw and knife to dismember the body in the bathtub, but police said that the bathroom was found with no blood, so Zach had cleaned that up. He cut her hair, and they found her head in a pot on the front of the stove. Her feet and hands were in a pot on the back of the stove. Her legs and arms were in a roasting pan in the oven, and her torso was in a black trash bag in the refrigerator. There was speculation of possible cannibalism because of the way these items were found, but when they did the autopsy on his body, they didn't find any evidence of that. Now, there's been many reports of paranormal activity by neighbors from this apartment since all of this happened. There have been paranormal shows that have done investigations here, and the building has been part of ghost tours that tourists can take when vacationing to New Orleans. They turned the Voodoo Temple into the Bloody Mary Haunted Museum, and at first would let people tour the apartment, which still has the stove in it. Now, it's been cleaned up, but there's stuff that's still in there. Addie's family felt like that was extremely disrespectful, and I can totally see that. I don't think they should allow people in the apartment, and they don't anymore, but the shop still does ghost tours. And here are two snippets from his journal that they found in his apartment. Today is Monday, 16, October, 2 a.m. I killed her at 1 a.m. Thursday, 5 October. I very calmly strangled her. It was very quick. Halfway through the task, I stopped and thought about what I was doing. The decision to halt the first idea and move to Plan B, the crime scene you are now in, came after a while. I scared myself, not by the action of calmly strangling the woman I've loved for 1.5 years and then desecrating her body, but by my entire lack of remorse. I've known for forever how horrible of a person I am. Ask anyone. And decided to quit my jobs and spend the $1,500 cash I had being happy until I killed myself. So that's what I did. Good food, good drugs, good strippers, good friends, and any loose ends I may have had. I didn't contact any of my family, so that'll explain the shock. And had a fantastic time living out my days. It's just about time now.
Oh, I'm glad he had a fantastic time after, you know, he killed somebody. That's right. That's hard to hear. I know he had issues that made this worse, but to party up, you know, all the way up to his own death is like a slap in the face to Addie's family.
Right.
She didn't get to have a say.
No.
You know, in her last days.
She did not. She didn't even know her last days were her last days.
Yeah.
Zach made that decision for her.
That's crazy.
I know it's a pretty short story because there's not a whole lot to it. It's pretty cut and dry. Everybody knows what happened. But I know some people have never heard this story or heard of Zach and Addie, and so I just wanted to make sure that this is a story that people have heard of. And if you ever are in New Orleans or know people, New Orleans, however you want to say it.
NOLA.
You can actually go to this museum still. I don't know if it has any Zach and Addie stuff in it. I doubt it does. But
they still got the freaking stove in the freaking room.
The apartment's still there. As far as I know.
Yeah,
I know.
They probably don't now, but
they may not.
I don't know.
When they stopped doing the tours, they might have got rid of everything, or they may even rent them out again. So if you are in the area or looking for a place to rent, please know that this is something that happened here. I know some people don't want to live in places like this. But that's their story. I thought it was kind of sad, but
that's just crazy. I mean,
I know.
You know, for one thing, I mean, if you're in a relationship where you're just fighting and you're verbally and physically abusive to each other, man, just cut ties and go.
I heard when I was researching this, there was a couple of things that said that they would call it like a graveside relationship or graveyard relationship, mm-hmm. because that's the only way it's going to end. It's one of those.
Yeah, but still.
Wild.
That's crazy.
Yeah. They were so in love. So, well, okay, she was not at first. She didn't want nothing to do with him. She thought he was just over the top, and because he had come there with his dad, and his dad kept going, traveling, and he stayed. And he was so young. He was only like 17 when he got there. But his dad was like, okay, bye, and just left him. But that's what he did. He would do his tricks to get his money.
So he was 17 and out of the military?
No, no, no. He came to New Orleans before he met Lana, before he joined the military.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right, when he first got there.
Sorry, I missed that, I guess.
It's okay.
Yeah, I guess I missed that. The story was so short.
I know. I'm sorry. Well, I mean, you can go into lots of detail, but most of the detail is not going to be about the crime. It's just going to be about them.
I got you.
Yeah. They're how they were before, how they were together. But you can sum all that up in this was a wild relationship that burned out very fast.
They just partied till they couldn't party no more.
Right. They each had their own demons they were dealing with. And when they brought them together, it was just, like I said, a match to a gas tank. Explosive.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you guys tuned in to listen to this story, even though it was...
just a quick one.
Just a quick one. Not all of them are, you know, 30 or 40 minutes long. You know, some of them are short and sweet and to the point.
Yeah, they don't need to be.
But anyway, hope you guys enjoyed it. Catch us next time on our next one. That sounded stupid.
Catch us next time on our next one. Where we're going to do it again.
We're going to do it all over again. Another time.
Not this time. It'll be like this time.
But next time.
But it'll be next time.
So dumb.
You're such a wordsmith over there.
I am.
You're doing great.
Okay. Well,
this is us.
You guys have a great night.
Okay, bye.